You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1, registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, or 2, solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through CG Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor, CG Advisory Services, and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of CG Advisory Services and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WWWTCM News Talk 580. Welcome aboard to Prout Financial Design's New Retirement Radio. It's Thursday. Good morning. Joining us live in the studio, Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It is so good to be here. Who's playing that rock music on a station? I mean, you know,
rock and
what's
roll.
Going on with that? Hey, welcome. It is Thursday morning, 9/12/24. If you do happen to be listening to the broadcast on, see, that would be 9/13/14. The 14th, that is a rebroadcast, but because it is today, you can call in and or text in if you would, Ron, those numbers, please.
Today is the tomorrow you worried about yesterday.
You know, you're such a philosopher.
You can call or you can send us a text message at 947-0023, 947-0023.
Thank you. Joining us today, Heidi Cartwright. Good morning, Heidi.
Good morning, Dennis. I'm really happy to be here today to join you.
Thanks. Great to have you here, our own retirement income certified professional and managing director, talking about this soft landing today.
Yes,
and it's
indeed.
Not, we're not talking pillow talk here or, you know, jumping onto the bed. Don't jump onto the bed. You know, that sort of thing. But more of this economic soft landing.
Correct.
Yes. Thank you. And then Deanne Jennings.
Good morning, everyone. So happy to be here.
Our director of operations and fisherwoman. Professionale.
Yes.
Yes.
Have fun.
She caught the 22-pound salmon sometime back.
Yes, you may have heard of that story.
Yes.
I am that person.
She is that person.
That
live.
Lucky day.
Here and with the assistance of her husband, Larry.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I learned everything from him.
Fisher people. This week, RMDs. Why is this a big deal?
Required minimum distribution.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. To introduce, on September 2nd of 1974, Labor Day, President Gerald Ford signed the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, ERISA, into law. 1974. 50 short years ago. This landmark legislation not only established standards for private industry retirement plans to protect workers, it also created what? What kind of retirement account did it create in 1974? Any guesses?
The IRA.
You win.
Bing, bing, bing. Good job.
Ron Jolly. 1974. Baby. In the decades that followed, the retirement account rules have constantly evolved. The Roth IRA arrived in what year?
1984. 9, 10.
98.
98.
So close.
Sorry, I couldn't spin fast enough with the clue. 1998. The year 2020 brought the game-changing Secure Act. And then followed by Secure 2.0 in 2022. Now, why is this important? Beginning in 2025, some beneficiaries must take RMDs during the Secure Act, Act's 10-year rule. So, if you inherit an IRA from mom or dad, let's say they're 90 years old, they've already been taking their RMD, you'll need to continue that RMD. If they haven't taken that RMD yet this year, you have to take it and declare the tax on it. Well, should I be upset about that? I mean, I have to take money out of their IRA and declare it myself? No. Unless it's $80,000. If the IRA is $1 million, you'll have to take about 80 grand that year as a beneficiary. That's why jumping to the end of my material here. Thank you, Dennis. I wanted you to skip through the middle anyway. Jumping to the end of the material, you as an IRA owner want to think more deeply about these retirement accounts. Is this something I really want to pass the whole thing? I want to pass on to my children, or should I convert some of it to a Roth, given the complexity of today's issues and how low today's brackets are? Don't think necessarily just in terms of required minimums. Think about overall planning with that IRA. And that's directly from Ed Slott in so many words, okay? If a person dies on or after the required beginning date, that's the time at which they have to start taking those distributions. The switch is flipped on, and lifetime RMDs, including a year of death RMD, will apply. That means that there's been a lot of question. Now, if mom or dad passes away, do I need to take their RMD in the year of death if they're required to by their age? The answer to that is yes. Let's say they were 70. They don't have to take an RMD. Neither do you. You don't have to take a year of death RMD. So if the switch has already been flipped on, you have to take the RMD. If it's not been flipped on, the answer, no, I don't have to. Isn't that great? I mean, you have learned so much today.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying once that switch is turned on, it cannot be turned off.
Correct. You win. A plus.
I was thinking that, but I just didn't say it.
By the way, just thinking of last week's show with Heather Cartwright. Thank you, Ron, for participating so directly in that. And I noticed on yesterday, 9/11, you played a few news items from that time. Yeah. And that was fantastic. Thanks for doing that. Yep. So anyway, moving on. This rule can be beneficial in many situations. Skipping on. Who takes the RMD? For example, if a charity is named as a partial beneficiary, cashing out the charity's percentage could cover what remains of the year of death RMD. So if the charity is a 10% beneficiary along with those children of yours, then they could theoretically, if they don't want to take that amount, they can satisfy the full charity's full distribution. And it's not taxable to anyone, and you satisfy that charity's gift through that IRA. Now, that's powerful.
It is, especially in the year of death when you might have unanticipated taxes already going into your financials for that year, and to be able to defer additional income that you would have to take out to a charity if it's named could be a nice tax strategy.
So think about this. You're sitting on your couch, minding your own business, listening to this radio show, WTCM AM 580. And you say to yourself, so what you're saying, Dennis, is 2% of my IRA, it's worth $1 million. I want to give it to my church when I die. I love my church. And I want them to get that tax-free, and I don't want my son to pay the tax on that amount. And it's going to help satisfy my RMD in the year that I die? Yeah. If he inherits it and you haven't yet taken your RMD, he could theoretically use a portion, that portion, to help satisfy his RMD that year, and then he's taking care of that charity for you, and it's been done for the church itself. That's powerful stuff. So all of a sudden, you can say, let's say my RMD is 10% or so because I'm getting older. I'm going to name the charity as a 10% beneficiary on that IRA account, and then my son or daughter or whomever is inheriting can use that then year of death RMD to satisfy the charity's share, and I can still satisfy, they can satisfy the RMD for themselves that year and for myself too.
That's really sort of a nifty little
that is so cool.
Yeah. That's what we're hearing
maneuver,
about.
Maneuver, I would say.
It's like the bike you got when you were 15 years old, and it's got the best colors. It's got the banana seat on it, you know, given those days. That's what we're talking. It's the yellow bike with the banana seat on it.
I wonder who invented that and if they received any, like, royalties. That banana seat was a great idea.
It was.
Because you could get two kids on that bike, you know? Yeah. And they could hold on. On that thing on the back.
Get one on the handlebars. Yeah. There's three kids, one bike.
Go. Yeah. I mean, talk
about
dangerous.
Three-person vehicle.
Wouldn't pass today, but anyway, it did in the old days. So that's amazing what this allows you to think about. So the best way to approach this new landscape is to avoid a minimum mentality, reading directly from this month's Ed Slott IRA Advisor Report. Thank you. Do not let RMDs drive your tax planning. With this outlook, the 10-year rule does not matter. So all of your beneficiaries have to satisfy the distribution of 10 years, whether it's a Roth IRA or regular IRA. They have to empty it by the end of the 10th year after your date of death. So you die this year, it's got to be emptied by the end of 34, okay? If your children are inheriting and not a spouse. RMDs do not matter, so ignore them if you haven't yet started taking RMDs. Instead, think maximum. How much can be withdrawn now and in the near future at relatively modest tax rates? Tax planning should drive retirement account distributions. Even though the RMD has been raised to age 73, doing nothing until age 73 is a mistake, I would say could be a mistake, depending on your individual situation. So keep this in mind. These accounts can be opportunities for you to think bigger, perhaps, than what you had previously thought.
Yeah, and when we go to the Ed Slott class, he talks about the period of time from 59 and a half to your RMD age as the golden period, because you are not compelled to take money out of an IRA, and you're not penalized if you do. Mm-hmm. But what we like to use that a lot with our clients is as they approach RMD age, we start looking at Roth conversions, distributions, and those sort of things in order to address some of those tax strategies.
Looking at it in terms of the realms of your overall financial picture, how do you advance it? I mean, isn't that what all of us want to do? We want to move ahead. This is one significant way you can do that. How can I move my situation ahead by thinking perhaps more deeply about my retirement account or retirement accounts?
Do you have any idea how many, what percentage of people that hold these retirement accounts need to take that required minimum distribution? Or what percentage where is it an option? What percentage of retirement account holders say, I don't need to take my RMD, but I have to now by law?
Well, everyone has to take it, but certainly reinvest it.
Who doesn't need it? Who doesn't need to take it?
Well, I would say, like, if you have income from other sources and you're meeting all of your daily living expenses, you're like, well, I'd like to keep this money invested. Yeah. And people don't like to pay taxes. So, you know, when you're talking about, okay, we're doing this tax strategy and you're going to benefit from it down the road a ways, sometimes that's hard for people to make that jump and go with that kind of strategy.
It can be. But again, think about not only tax brackets now and how low they are. Think about your children in case they are inheriting what that's going to mean for them, and how you can help them plan by paying some more tax today. Some people don't want to pay more tax to the exclusion of, honestly, good long-term planning. Mm-hmm. So taking advantage of this 12% federal tax bracket going all the way, I think it's to $94,000 of taxable income for a couple today, that is really reasonable. That's a low tax bracket. All right? Mm-hmm. So perspective, perhaps. So Heidi's talking about a soft economic landing, the soft landing. What is, Heidi, a soft landing?
Well, that is such a good question, and I'm sure everyone out there is just dying to know, so we're going to address that. I am talking from an article written by Daryl Spence. He is a U.S. economist with Capital Group, which is affiliated with American Funds, and he is a chartered financial analyst, or a CFA. So this is just another designation out there, very similar to the designations that Dennis and I have. They all have different bents to them as to what you're studying, but it is a professional designation. So let's go back to Dennis's question. What is the soft landing exactly? Well, a soft landing essentially describes an economy that slows enough to allow inflation to fall, but not so much that it tips into a recession. So it wants to go far, but not too far, type of thing.
So instead of eggs being $7 a dozen, they're $6.95, maybe.
That could be one example. That is not in the article. Inflation has come down. Job creation has cooled, but remains positive, and the U.S. economy has avoided a recession. The inflation battle, however, is not over. Inflation still remains over the Fed's 2% target. Now, the Fed chairman, Jerome Powell, all but promised a rate cut during his highly anticipated speech in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And now this article was written at the end of August, and the speech he's talking about was at the end of August. So we've had a couple of weeks of activity since then, so just keep that in mind.
Yeah, the rumor seems to be that they're talking about it for next week. We'll see. We'll see.
Quarter percent?
Yeah, maybe a quarter.
So if the Fed does lower rates at its September meeting, it will be the first rate cut since the COVID-induced recession of March of 2020.
Wow.
It will mark the end of the Fed's historic two-year tight money tightening campaign that began in March of 2022.
Okay, so did the first rate increase start in 22 or 2020?
2022.
Okay, so it wasn't 2020. I was just confused.
The recession was in 2020 when COVID hit. That's what
right. Okay, that's what it's referencing. Okay. Yeah. It almost sounded like Barbara, so, you know, 2020.
So Dennis would probably ask at this point, what comes next?
I should have. There it is.
So although there is no official definition of a soft landing, it is considered for the purposes of this analysis to occur when real GDP growth expands on average for three quarters at a pace below the economy's potential growth rate, which is, right now is 2%. So nice and easy, right? These numbers come from the Congressional Budget Office that they are working with. If the U.S. economy grows at a 1.5% annualized rate in the third quarter of 2024, and that will end on September 30, the current consensus is that it will have met this definition of a soft landing. So we will know by the end of September if we are in that soft landing or not.
What will determine that again?
I don't know if you want me to read the whole definition, but it has to do with the GDP.
Well, at the end of September, if what happens, what number?
If the annualized rate, if the economy grows by 1.5 annualized rate in the third quarter, for the quarter starting
for third quarter.
July 1st.
1.5%.
Yeah.
Annualized.
So this could be an important milestone because when it has occurred before in history, the economy has tended to accelerate after that happens. And they use, for an example, what happened back in 1995. Now, we can't say just because it happened in 1995, it's going to happen in 2024, because not every single piece of the puzzle is the same. So you just have to take a step back and so say this could happen and sort of prepare for what could happen.
Yeah, what's interesting is that 1.5% rate, I was just checking my numbers, making certain that they're correct, going back and forth with a calculator five times. It's 0.375 per quarter equals 1.5% per year, just in case anyone was really questioning that.
So it makes a difference if you're quoting quarterly or annual.
Correct.
Mm. Yes, yeah. Indeed. So that said, in 1995, the U.S. economy had more slack than it does now, with an unemployment rate of 5.5 falling to
3.8%.
Correct.
To be clear. Yeah.
To be clear. The unemployment rate is currently stands at 4.3, so right now. So you can see that we're not as high as it was back then, the 5.5. So they're saying that there's not as much slack. There's not as much room between those two numbers. So we may not experience such a strong acceleration as they did in that time period. And some of this information that's coming to us about the labor market, a lot of information they talk about with the soft landing is how is the labor market doing. And I read you some of these numbers, but of course I can't stop there. I have to go find out, is this true? What happened with this? Didn't I hear something? And so I do research. And so I went and looked for the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and I found it very interesting that for June and July, from the stated employment rates, they lowered the number 86,000 lower than they had previously reported way back in June and July. So here is another element that could have some kind of impact on how reading the numbers.
Whether the Fed themselves will believe the numbers that come out right immediately after the quarter, or whether there might be some sort of adjustment made because, I'm sorry, we were incorrect for whatever reason. Great point, Heidi. Mm-hmm.
So maybe your ideas of what's going to happen, that could switch as this more data comes out. Yeah. So investors expect the Fed to cut rates by 50 basis points, 0.5%.
Not a quarter, not 25 bips, Ron.
No.
Just in case you were, you know.
And they say it could be even 75 basis points. But this Darrell believes that there is a reasonable probability that we get less than that. So he's thinking the Fed isn't going to go as quickly as maybe a lot of the other people in the market analysts out there.
For those out there who are wondering what the heck a basis point is, that's 0.01%. If you have 100 basis points, it equals 1%. 1%. So 50 basis points, obviously, then, is 0.5%. All right, in regular lingo.
So I thought it was very interesting. Darrell makes this comment in the article. He says, whenever Powell speaks, it's like a Rorschach test. And I think that's the test where, you know, they put the ink blots and they say, what do you see there? Well, people hear what they want to hear is what Darrell says. So you want to make sure that you don't always rely on just one person's point of view. I love listening to the business news in the morning. I'm sure that doesn't surprise anybody.
Or but, new retirement radio. That's what you really want to listen
exactly.
to.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's always differing opinions. And so, you know, you want to listen, take that in, but also have a little skepticism because it's not always what it seems.
Because it's the federal government.
We do have a question for our panel of experts today.
You bet. We'll give it a shot.
All right. I am 38 and have $200,000 in my 401k. But should I diversify and shift a portion of my contributions to a Roth account for tax purposes? I don't know that I will make more than I do now in retirement, but I'm guessing tax rates will be more in 30 years than they are now. So here's somebody thinking
what a
about
great
this
question. Yeah. Really I love this smart. Question. Now, do we need to take a break here, Juan? Where are we with this? Okay, let's cover this then. If you can make contributions to a Roth account within your 401k, by the way, first of all, you're 38 and have 200,000 in your 401k. Great job.
Yeah.
First off, that's fantastic.
That is good.
You bet. Secondly, diversifying within your 401k, paying some of the tax with your current contributions, which is what you'll be doing by putting money into the Roth. Second, fantastic. Third, the fact that you're dollar cost averaging into that Roth account. That's what I've been writing about here recently. I mean, I was just reviewing this last night, some of my own writings. It's great. It's a great way to average in. Now, you may want to confirm this with your own tax consultant or financial advisor, but generally, I would say that is a great diversification tool. It's by the funds that you own within. It's the tax impact that you're going to see coming out. It's the fact that you can also dollar cost average. You can buy more shares of that mutual fund when the price comes down, which it will. So those are things that you can move in your direction by just making minor changes within your 401k. One last point. You can decide that you want to only put 10% of your contribution into your Roth, or 20% or 50%, whatever that percentage is, of new money that's going in. So of your contributions, you can say, I want to put 10% into the Roth, 90% into the pre-tax account, as an example, or any other combination you might desire. So keep that in mind. These are much more flexible than you might understand or realize as a part of your overall financial planning picture.
I was going to ask you said that, what portion of, I don't know if it's male or female here, of our texter, what portion of their 401k should they put into a Roth? So what, and you said 10, 20, 50, whatever. How do you decide? What kind of factors do you look at?
Factors, I look at age, which he's told us he's 38. He's relatively young. He's got a long time to theoretically take advantage of this. To his tax bracket. So what is your current tax rate that you're paying? Three, again, time frame, as long as the time frame is relatively long. Four, what's your marriage situation? Would someone else inherit your account? That's an immediate loved one that's near your age. Could they take advantage of the same tax planning rather that you have? Those are some of the bigger picture items I tend to look at.
Yeah, and you can sort of play with that number till you reach the right balance. Like if you're looking at the top of your tax bracket last year, you may say, hey, I'm going to pull back on the Roth a little bit to keep in that tax bracket. Or conversely, if you're over a tax bracket, you're solidly in the middle, it may not make a difference at all if you put all of your contributions in a Roth or not. So you should, if it works for you, if that goes.
So ideally, in the end, you would like everything to be in the Roth in the 401k, correct?
No. Because it's going to depend on what you want to give to charity and other things too.
Oh, that's true.
And what what the children are, their tax brackets are, and what your own tax bracket is. It can be an excellent diversification tool.
And one thing people should realize as of now is that anything your employer puts in, the match or a profit sharing or something like that, that is going to be pre-tax money. So even if you put 100% of your contribution into a Roth, you may be growing your pre-tax money, your traditional money as well.
If you have a $1 million IRA, the after-tax equivalent value is about $700,000 at a 30% bracket. If you inherit if you have a $1 million Roth IRA, the after-tax amount, $1 million. Plain and simple. Okay. So we have some economist newsletter information from our own economist, Deanne, and the stats were so interesting.
They were.
Yes, please
tell us. We had to share them.
Yeah,
Robert Powers. We get an economist newsletter from Robert Powers. And I love September. It's my favorite month. But there's a thing called the September effect. Here are some historical facts about September in the stock market, starting with the average monthly returns in the S&P 500 over the 1928 through 2023 period. In 2020, the S&P 500 was a negative 3.92%. And this is September. In 2021, it was negative 4.76%. In 2022, it was negative 9.34%. In 2023, it was negative 4.87%. Goldman Sachs has added that the September S&P 500 return data bank by calculating median two-week S&P 500 returns from 1950 to date. This data indicates that the worst two-week return historically has taken place during the last 2 weeks of September.
So that seems like next week.
Yeah.
And the week after that.
It might be coming, according to data, according to stats. Mm-hmm. And we're asking, why September? And so the reason we found this article so interesting is because it's mixing behavioral science, psychology, with the market. One piece of behavioral science research that substantiates it has to do with the seasonal affective disorder, SAD. Researchers have found compelling evidence that SAD is responsible for September being the worst month for average stock market performance. Research shows that such an early focus on the fall months and the reality that relatively carefree summer days are ending often translates into pessimism about the stock market. Hmm. A prominent study analyzing the relationship between the stock market and those suffering from SAD is titled Seasonal Asset Allocation Evidence from Mutual Fund Flows. It was conducted by Dr. Mark Kamstra, Dr. Lisa Kramer, and Dr. Maurice Levi. They found that month-to-month changes in those suffering from SAD are correlated with mutual fund inflows and outflows. One of the most telling of their tests occurred when they analyzed mutual funds and flows and the incident of SAD in Australia. Because Australia is the southern hemisphere, it should follow a cycle that is mirror opposite in the one of U.S. And it does, and the relationship still held. So after September, rain comes. So think positive. While September has historically been the weakest month of the year for the stock market, October has historically been the month where the most 10% plus rallies have begun.
Okay, hang on a second. Mm. Does that destroy all our preconceived notions about October? It did mine.
Yes.
I mean, isn't that interesting? Because the biggest or the most 10% plus rallies occur in October.
Yes.
But I always thought October was the month you should be nervous about because big things happen.
October Morn. Is that the song you were talking about, Ron?
No, that's...
September Morn. Oh, yeah, that one by Neil Diamond. I'm just teasing, of course. Okay,
so
go ahead.
So there's hope. Of the 61 rallies of 10% plus since World War II, nearly a third have started during the month of October. So there's hope in October.
So don't despair in September because October comes after it.
Exactly, Heidi. And Ron, did you know that we had a quoted financial advisor in this room?
A quoted? Oh, quoted where?
Heidi Cartwright. She was quoted in the Traverse Northern Michigan magazine in September, and it was an article called Wealth and Wisdom, and there's some fantastic quotes by her, several, and a nice picture, and we're just really proud of her.
Oh, thank you, Dan.
Good job, Heidi.
Thank you.
Ooh, the best stat of the day right there. Yeah, that was a great quote, too.
It's pretty startling when you open it up and you're like, wait, that's me.
I know.
Did I say that?
Very good.
That's great.
They put it in there twice, so they must have thought it was really good.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You had a stat maybe a month ago, I think it was, 90 days out from a November election, if wherever the S&P 500 is 90 days out, if it's lower than that on election day, the current administration would lose. If the S&P 500 is up from where it was 90 days out, the current administration would stay.
Hmm. Good memory.
That's what I recall that you were saying. So
again, focus is on October.
I know.
Yeah. Right now, 3 months ago, from 3 months ago, the market is up. Mm-hmm. Beginning of June there, June, July, August, and just beginning of September, it was about 39,000 or so.
It's been
volatile. We're at about 40, almost 41,000 right now. So, yeah, it has been jumping all over. Been down here recently in the past few days. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. It was about 38.5, 38.6 on the Dow about 3 months ago. So, yeah, we'll see. Obviously, we've got about 6-7 weeks before the election. Mm-hmm. Is that right?
That is, seven weeks roughly.
Yeah.
Someone texted, I like Uncle William Roth. Unlike Uncle Sam, he let me keep more of my investment dollars.
Nice.
Uncle Roth.
Yeah, now the interesting thing is they can always change the rules. They can change the rules on regular IRAs and on Roth IRAs. So keep that in mind. Don't bet the farm in any one given strategy. You know, just general advice. Try to diversify both as to your investments and to their tax implications in the future. So if you're going down all one road in terms of using regular IRAs or traditional IRAs, you may want to consider the Roth. And at any age, you can do a conversion. You could theoretically, now you might not necessarily want to do this, but at age 90, do a conversion or a partial conversion, depending on your tax and depending on who's inheriting. If your spouse is that much younger than you, yeah, and or the children are, they could take advantage of it as well. So keep in mind, it's not just about your own life expectancy. It's about the life expectancy of your immediate beneficiary and also your contingent beneficiaries, especially if you've named primary and contingent beneficiaries. The final word of the day.
ProutFinancialDesign.com.
Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, Deanne Jennings from ProutFinancialDesign.com in the Social District on the East Side.
Yes, indeed. Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, Ron. Dollar cost averaging involves continuous investment in securities, regardless of fluctuation in price levels of such securities. An investor should consider their ability to continue purchasing through fluctuating price levels. Such a plan does not assure a profit and does not protect against loss in declining markets. There is no guarantee that a diversified portfolio will enhance overall returns or outperform a non-diversified portfolio. Diversification does not protect against market risk. All performance referenced is historical and is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. The economic forecasts set forth in this material may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful. A Roth IRA offers tax deferral on any earnings in the account. Qualified withdrawals of earnings from the account are tax-free. Withdrawals of earnings prior to age 59 and a half or prior to the account being opened for 5 years, whichever is later, may result in a 10% IRS penalty tax. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Traditional IRA account owners have considerations to make before performing a Roth IRA conversion. These primarily include income tax consequences on the converted amount in the year of conversion, withdrawal limitations from a Roth IRA, and income limitations for future contributions to a Roth IRA. In addition, if you are required to take a required minimum distribution, RMD, in the year you convert, you must do so before converting to a Roth IRA.